And of course, their usual mission went like this: kill this kitten for fun. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 466, recorded on May 8, 2017. Welcome to the 466th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 299th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Durk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, this is kind of embarrassing. I am back in New York. However, I forgot to bring my headset with me. So, I have to record off my iPad once again, unfortunately. And I won't be able to record off my headset until I get back to LA in June. Unless I buy a cheap headset before.
Yeah, I think buying a cheap headset in the interim would probably be a good idea.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's an interesting week for game playing. What have you been playing, TJ?
I was playing Crawl this last week.
Crawl, yes. the arcade game from 1983?
I wish. Not quite. It's called Crawl. It's a multiplayer dungeon crawler action RPG from Powerhoof. And okay. It's a multiplayer game. Basically at the start of a match, you have up to four humans. And at the very beginning, it's a free-for-all, and you all kill each other, and the last human standing gets to journey into the dungeon. The other three players pick up the roles of ghosts, who can inhabit objects and throw them at the player, or they can jump onto these pentagram sigils and summon monsters and take control of those monsters. And the point is, you want to kill the human and be the human who makes it to the end of the dungeon and kills the boss.
That's an intriguing concept.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's sort of, you get AI playing as the ghosts in single player. But when you've got, we had four people playing, and it was just a nefarious free-for-all slugfest. You go through rooms, and eventually you make it to a set of stairs that takes you down a floor. And in between those floors, every player gains wrath for doing damage to the human or being killed by the human. And you can use that to upgrade monsters based on, you choose a god that you worship, a Cthulhu god that you worship at the beginning of the game, and that gives you a set of monsters that you can upgrade as you go through levels.
Now, wait a minute. What is the ratio of being in the four-human duke out and dungeon delving as a single human? I mean, how much of it is prior and how much is the latter?
The beginning part that determines which human will be going into the dungeon is literally probably going to be less than 20 seconds every time.
Okay.
Whereas the dungeon crawl itself is a pretty long experience. Each game takes about probably 20 to 30 minutes to complete, depending on how well the human does. It's really interesting, as an action slugfest multiplayer game. I haven't really seen anything like it that I can call to mind. It's really fun playing as the human because you can go to shops in between and you can buy weapons, and some of them have certain abilities to them, or you can buy spells to use in battle. And it's really interesting as the monster because you're constantly upgrading your stuff and getting greater, more terrifying monsters that can do more things.
There's a lot of interesting multiplayer games coming out with a lot of interesting gameplay mechanics. Have you seen Project Darwin yet?
I have not.
Okay, that's the game I described that I saw being played at PAX, in which you have three teams of two in an ever-shrinking gameplay field.
Oh, right. Was this the one that you said was sort of like the Hunger Games?
Yeah, it was the Hunger Games meet with a Long Dark, and it's just wild because if you and your teammate are the last two up, then, oh, guess what? We're no longer teammates. Now time to die. So, yeah, I mean, I like the fresh concepts of gameplay that's coming out now. Now that we have the technology to do it, right? So here you have a game in which you combat briefly in the beginning, and then basically it's a co-op 3-on-1 fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just pains me to see what Evolve could have been like. I think they're coming out with a sequel at some point. Try and do it right, or just make Left 4 Dead 3.
And one of the more interesting things about Crawl is that whichever monster or whichever ghost lands the killing blow on the human becomes the human and continues the trek.
Okay.
So it's a 3-on-1, but the one is always shifting. The sides are always shifting.
Why am I reminded of Freeze Tag somehow? You know, yeah. Oh, tag, I'm it.
Yeah.
Come for me. And the three players are invisible to the other player?
You can see, like, the ghosts float around on the screen and you can control them. They pretty much move along with the whoever is the human as they travel through the dungeon.
So, Scott, what about you? What have you been playing?
I've completed Thimbleweed Park, and boy, did it jump the fourth wall at the end. But I've been playing the third Trails in the Sky game that recently
came out. The third? Part 3 has come out?
Yes, Part 3 has come out, yeah. It's called The Third. You follow the priest character that shows up in the second game. So Estella is no longer the main character. But her story arc ended in the second game, so that's fine. And
marrying her brother.
Yeah, with, well, her foster brother. It's, yeah. There's a lot to the story, I think. If you go through it, it's not just titillation like you're making it sound like. It's an actual well-developed story, and it's a good one. So, you know, so now you move on to the third game, and you're going into a different story, and and this one also ties up loose ends from the first two games, so it gives a nice filling out of the whole trilogy.
Now, here's the thing. In Japan, this is actually a middle series. You know, there was something before and something after. And I'm wondering, is there any references to the series that came before?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same world. Okay. In all these little trilogies, it's the same world, but different people in different conflicts in different places. Like the Steel series is in the Eberron Empire, where you're following the Bard character. I can't remember his name at the moment. And he's up in there trying to form the school and train his younger generation to be better than they were being. So there are conflicts and other things going on in different parts of the world, which kind of makes it a little bit like the Suikoden universe, where there were different conflicts happening in different places in the same world. So it made it a larger, more interesting one, instead of like typical Final Fantasy, which has a small world with a few cities, and then you never see that world again. Whereas in Trails, it's there's a lot of different stories happening, and it's basically, like I said, the same world, but different stories happening in different places, just like in Suikoden and this series.
Okay. Have you played the other trilogies?
Not yet. I'm going to eventually when I finish this trilogy.
So as for me, I haven't played much, but I've started playing Cities: Skylines on the Xbox One. It looks nice, but it could really use a fast forward button, which is shocking because anytime you have a SimCity type game, you want to be able to fast forward. It's weird that it doesn't have that, so you have to sit around. Your city's doing well, just drumming your fingers, waiting for something to happen.
Had you played it before when it was on PC or anything?
No, I haven't played it on PC, and the Xbox One version is making me want to play it on the PC version, which is $30 on Steam right now. I looked at the deluxe version, and it's not worth it because all it does is add 5 monuments and you get the soundtrack. Who cares?
Yeah, and I don't know how it is on the Xbox, but Pandora, or is it Pandora Interactive?
Paradox.
That's the one. They're very helpful with mod support on that game. I am certain that there is a fast forward button somewhere in there.
They said it's coming at some point.
Yeah.
Just like there are other bugs. There are bugs in which if your city gets too big, the game crashes. There's a lot of bugs, and people have been complaining on the on their page about they haven't really done anything in the past 4 days since they said they were going to do something. So we'll see. Like I said, it's standard SimCity sort of stuff. A little pared down so that you still have the same complexity, but you do a lot more with your actions. And I will say this, don't put your sewer pipe next to where your drinking water comes from. You're also going to have a lot of ambulances going back and forth. I'm careful to make sure that my drinking water is upstream of the sewer. But yeah, I mean, I got my first two achievements. We'll see how far I get in it. Like I said, I've always been a fan. I played the very first SimCity. I don't know if it was on the Amiga or on the C64. I think it was the Amiga that I first played it on. So I'm very well versed with the city building sim. One thing I really want to get back into, and I have it on the PC, is the Transit game, which I'm forgetting already, which is actually pretty good. I mean,
did you say like a Transport Empire game?
Yes, Transit. It's only Mass Transit, though.
Transport Fever is, I think, the one.
No, it's not by them. So Cities in Motion, which I believe is another Paradox Interactive game. Yeah, it is Paradox Interactive. It is actually pretty fun. Especially if you only want to get into just the mass transit portion. I mean, you'd be shocked to hear this, but there's something fun about selecting where the bus stops are going to go in a city. and I also have the DLC for it. I think I have Cities in Motion 2. I'm not sure. Anyways, I highly recommend checking it out.
When I think about that game, I've been covering Transport Fever for a while, and so I've been kind of had my head on one sort of Transport Empire game. But, is it just, because Transport Fever, it came from Train Fever, and they went over, they expanded it out to, trains, cars, trucks, airplanes, the whole shebang. Is Cities in Motion, does it stretch to that, It also wasn't like just one city. You actually went and did it across this entire region.
Well, here's the thing. It's very urban. So you had the U.S. cities expansion and the Japanese cities expansion. The first one takes place in Europe. So it's also from Cities in Motion 2 is from 2012 and Transport Fever is from 2016.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, here's the thing. Cities in Motion deals with public transportation, but it gets really deep in it. It gets into the politics and the logistics and all that stuff. It has nothing to do with freight transport. It's basically moving people and just people in a city. And you have to figure out how to lessen traffic by where you put your subways, where you put your buses, where you put your trolleys and all that stuff. Here's the thing. Watch the trailers for Cities in Motion. You'll be in love instantly. They have a great trailer for both games.
Excellent. I will check it out. I do have to ask before we move on. Do you think, I want to ask you this personally, because I've spent some time away from it now, but I was ended at the time that it happened. Do you think that City Skylines would have done as well if it hadn't come out at the same time as the disaster piece that was the last SimCity?
I think it's done really well, City Skylines. As a matter of fact, it won Game of the Year from Strategy Informer. Oh no, not Strategy. Game It Watcher. It won Game of the Year at Game Watcher, so it did very well. The problem is that their expansions have sucked, and they don't really add to the game. They're more like skins to the game. Like when I got excited over the idea of Cities in City Skylines with winter, right? And it turns out it's not adding seasons; it's just the entire game's in winter.
Yeah,
but it doesn't help. I want if you're gonna do something like if you're gonna do a weather edition, I want the entire year and having to deal with people having to find warmth and then going to this, what's it called, getting transport to the beach when it's summer and all that stuff. I don't want a skin.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the five monuments in the collector's edition for City Skylines.
One of the other big problems with that is that, like, when you've got a, there is a huge modding community behind that game, and so you've got a lot of players that are like, well, what are you going to give us that we can't already do ourselves?
Well, what you can do is actually monetize other, what's it called, creators, like they did with The Sims a while ago, and make them happy by saying, hey, listen, you know, you can help out your fellow creators if you buy these packs for their work in it.
Mm-hmm. That would be a good idea.
Before we move on to the news, we don't have room for it in the news proper, but Scott wanted to talk about the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild DLC that's coming.
Yeah, there's what it is there's some new armor sets, a new hard mode, and a new like Legend of a Master Sword challenge, and I think there's going to be a new dungeon as well. And the Master Sword Challenge is where you do this onslaught of fights. I think there's like 30 enemies, and you start off with no weapons or something like that. And you fight your way through all these enemies. And I think there's some new armor sets, and I forget what the set was now. But yeah, and there's also, I think, again, a new dungeon. I'm not sure what the pricing is yet. I don't know if that part was released. But there's.
And does this armor break easily, like your other weapons do?
No, the armor doesn't break. The armors never break. Okay. It's your. It's just your shields, bows, and swords that break.
Except for the one true sword.
Yeah, yeah. And even that gets drained.
Okay. I love the armor sets in Zelda. They're really sort of varied and cool, and I like the benefits that they give you, and you can upgrade them, which is a fun little side quest. I like the idea of the Master Sword quest and the new dungeon and other new stuff. I hate the idea that a hard mode will be locked behind a paywall.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, we're talking about like the original Legend of Zelda. You put in the name Zelda, and you're on basically new game. It was the first new game plus, in which you get a harder world with varied areas, new enemies, and like an overall harder challenge. Flash forward 27 years later, and now we're paying for it.
Well, wouldn't you say that in most games these days, anyway? You know, the thing is that, you know what annoys me about Mario Kart 8 for the Switch is it's basically Mario Kart 8 for the Wii U. They didn't even bother to hide that. But also, the multiplayer sucks, and, you know. Although, you know, Jim Sterling was talking about how people were complaining they had the fat mode, you know, the easy mode in which, you know, you can't drive off the road. And the only problem he had with that was that it was the default on. They should have had it as the default off and turn it on if you want it. And I don't care if you have an easy mode. I don't care if you have an easy mode that anybody can play. Look at Bayonetta. They had what they called the fat mode. You could play one-handed, if you get my drift. the only problems I already know is what problems that people like Paul had with the previous Zelda games in which everything was the easy mode and there was no way to turn it off because everybody had the same hand-holding, you know? That is a problem.
Well, that isn't in this game, Breath of the Wild.
No, I know that. Yeah. I know. I'm just saying, previous Zelda games, it had to remind you, you press A to use your sword.
I think that was mostly just Skyward Sword. It wasn't in... There was definitely not as much hand-holding in Ocarina or Twilight...
Ocarina was in 2000.
I know, and Twilight Princess, and... I didn't really play Wind Waker or Skyward Sword, and what was it? The other one I played was Link Between Worlds. That was the one on the DS, and where if you wanted the help, you had to use play coins for that. So it was, it was very optional that help, but I never needed it.
Anyways, we will move on to the news items now. First news item. Dragon Quest XI, battle system further detailed. And this comes from GameSpot. Square Enix has revealed more details about the battle system in Dragon Quest XI, the upcoming PS4 and 3DS chapter in the long-running RPG franchise. While the game will be employing traditional turn-based combat like previous installments, it'll introduce two new wrinkles to the battles in the form of zone and link systems. See? We just made the segue between Zelda and this game with Link.
Good job.
The new mechanics were revealed on the title's Japanese website as translated by Gematsu. Square Enix describes Zone as, quote-unquote, a state of heightened concentration. Like limit breaks in the Final Fantasy series, taking damage from foes will cause characters to enter the zone, surrounding them with a blue aura and temporarily increasing their abilities. Characters retain these enhancements until the aura dissipates, so you can carry its effects over into other battles. Zones also aren't limited to your party. Monsters will be able to enter this state as well and pose more of a challenge when powered up. The zone system ties into the game's link mechanic. When two or more characters enter zone, they can combine their skills into one powerful link attack. The kinds of link techniques you'll be able to battle vary depending on the skills and spells known by other zone-enhanced characters in your party, which is sort of reminding me of when in the Simpsons, beat-em-up game, you know, you could have two Simpsons characters combined for their special attack.
I remember that. That was fun.
Yeah, the kind of link techniques you'll be able to use in battle vary depending on... Oh, I already said that. Monsters that enter the zone will also be able to combine their powers and unleash link attacks during battle. Dragon Quest XI launches for the PS4 and 3DS in Japan on my birthday, July 29th. And a Switch version of the game has also been announced, though Square Enix hasn't confirmed when it will be released, which is, I think, is sort of burying the lead right there. So, I guess, would you prefer the 3DS version or the Switch version? I know which one you're going to pick.
I don't know. I mean, until I get a Switch, it'd probably have to be the 3DS version, but I really would like the Switch version.
You don't have a Switch already?
No, I don't have a Switch yet.
Are you playing the Wii U version of Zelda? Or?
No, I'm not. I'm watching a Let's Play. It's actually by the Game Bumps. Oh. And it's quite entertaining, and they... All right, a YouTube Let's Play, and they are not workplace safe or family friendly. They
NSFW, yes.
Yeah, you know. Anyways, and they're playing it, and one of the guys that plays it kind of goes into what he likes about the game and why it's different than some of these other games that have come out. What was wrong with these other games? And he felt like this was a really truly open world where it gave you like choice in doing things. Like, for instance, he would say in GTA you would get a quest and you couldn't leave that area. You were locked into that area to do that quest. You couldn't leave a building, go get something and come back. You had to do it there. Whereas in the Zelda game, you can start a quest and then go run off and do whatever. And
okay, here's the thing. We're straying off topic, though. Let's talk about Dragon Quest XI, because I know both of you are looking forward to this game.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it sounds a little bit like Square Enix is pulling from their success with Dragon Quest Heroes, because I was actually just playing Dragon Quest Heroes yesterday, and I was thinking about like all these flashy super attacks and tension gauges that they put into that game, because it's in many ways a traditional Warriors game.
I think this has been around. I mean, linking kind of also sounds like the combination attacks and Chrono Trigger, and there was a tension bar in Final Fantasy VII and IX.
Right, but you haven't seen that in Dragon Quest for an extremely long... In fact, I don't think they've really used that much in Dragon Quest.
No, never. I don't think they ever have.
And I have to... Like, if I was going to guess at the reason, it could be that they're trying to bring out that vibe of Final Fantasy, but even Final Fantasy hasn't done that with Final Fantasy XV. I really think it's sort of coming from the success of Dragon Quest Heroes. It sounds interesting. I like the flashy attacks. I enjoy them. I enjoy the ability to sort of get that last hurrah when things look the worst.
Do you think?
Well, let me ask you. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think Heroes and Builders have both been successful?
I know that that Dragon Quest Heroes has been successful. It was so successful in Japan that they gave Dragon Quest Heroes 2 like extra $1 million on their budget to work with.
Wow.
Like, and they took it and made that game beautiful. As for builders, I don't know anyone that doesn't like that game. I have a lot of friends who've played it. I know you've played it, and I've talked to a lot of other people that have played it, and it is kind of the perfect blend of RPG and Minecraft.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that they will bring Dragon's Quest XI to America and let us have it, you know, because they have had a history of not releasing some games over here.
I'm pretty sure they will. They brought Dragon's Quest 9 and 10. Yeah. So here's a question for you, TJ. I assume you're going to get the Switch version.
Yeah, definitely.
I wonder how it'll differ. It'll be kind of chintzy if they just ported the 3DS version.
Well, I mean, it would probably be like the way that Breath of the Wild is between the Wii U and the Switch. Nothing particularly different up close, but the draw distance on the Switch is absurdly better on the Wii U.
The 3DS version would not work on the Switch because it uses the bottom screen and top screen. Like, the top screen is an animated 3D, and then the bottom screen is 2D. So it's definitely different.
I will say this. The Switch desperately needs a good third-party game.
Yes, I agree. They need more than one. They need lots. But
here's the thing. I mean, you have Zelda, you have Kart, and then you'll have this. Those are three games that'll probably be must-buys for the Switch, right? So yeah. I'm pretty sure that you need another type of game, because you have two RPGs and you have Splatoon, I mean, but that'll be another game that you'll have to probably pick up.
You're also going to have ARMS, which is going to be a fighter, and I'm very interested to see how that goes.
I'm interested in Project Octopath. That's another RPG that has multiple...
Yeah, but that's just that, you know, you're talking about all these RPGs, you need other genres, too. So you have Zelda, which is an RPG, you have Dragon Quest, which is an RPG, you have Mario Kart, which is a kart game, mm-hmm. And Splatoon is at least a third person. I can't call it a shooter, but I can call it a third person action game.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need you really need a spread of genres. Or else people are going to think, oh, it's the JRPG machine.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it will be very telling to see how ARMS does this summer. I think it'll actually be sort of a decider on whether we'll see more projects like that on Nintendo, and they'll take more risks, or they'll back off.
I really doubt they're going to get first-person shooters on here. Everybody that wants to play a first-person shooter is either going to do PlayStation, PC, or Xbox. They're not going to...
Well, you could have an EA Sports title, like FIFA, yeah. You know, and not a cocked-up version they did for the Wii. God, that was a disaster. But here's if they sell enough consoles, EA may decide to put their foot in the water and see how it goes. Because if there's a global selling product for EA, it's FIFA.
Yeah.
I guess, to me, I don't mind if it's a JRPG machine. I you know, that's the genre I like, but yeah. Maybe get it into puzzles and... I'd really rather it aim towards more of the party... co-op, local people, player games, because I really have not seen anything for PlayStation 4 that I can play with my family on. I'm struggling to find games to play with them.
That reminds me, though.
Well, that's...
For Mario Kart 8, they're saying that the online is god-awful.
I don't think it's that bad. I've been playing it recently. And
a lot of disconnects.
And I watched King Grumps play it.
I've never been disconnected from the middle of an online match. I've been disconnected from a lobby after a match, but never in the middle of it.
I've heard people getting disconnected in the middle of it.
Huh. But I will say that is one thing that Nintendo Switch has going for it right now, is that there are a lot of good party games on it. Bomberman R is really fun. Puyo Puyo Tetris is really fun, and I love the... That is a good one. And if you've been looking for something that's like a super puzzle fighter, that is the thing.
That sounds like fun, yeah. And I think, which is, oh yeah, I at least if there's disconnects, at least it works at all. Unlike the Little Big Planet karting, online doesn't work whatsoever, and from what I've heard, Sony has no plans on fixing it. There's no connecting at all.
No, it seems like a lot of Nintendo and Sony tend to abandon projects shortly after hyping them up really quickly. Mm. I mean, who do you remember Mag, TJ?
I do.
That wasn't so far long ago, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, I mean,
remember PlayStation All-Stars, their attempt at a
Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
It's going to be really telling in the next couple months, because I do believe that Nintendo is about to roll out their pay for online system here pretty soon.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Nintendo. Don't try something you're not good at. Just if bring back the old Nintendo Club. Just leave it at that.
I will say this. If they use that money to improve their servers and boost and get rid of all these problems that people keep talking about with Mario Kart, I am all for paying for it. If they don't, I'm not going to spend a single dime on that.
Well, you know, you have people like Scott who just say, I just want the split screen multiplayer. You know, and Mario Kart is famous for that, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want, like, a local fun game to play that isn't an FPS, you know, and just doesn't seem to be that kind of environment on the PlayStation or Xbox.
Yeah.
Pretty sure a Mario Party game will come to the Switch, too.
Yeah.
So yeah. Here's the thing, Scott. The Switches are no longer all that hard to find right now. Do you think you're going to wait to buy one, or...
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Okay. You're waiting for a bundle?
Yeah, I think a bundle would be a good idea. Plus, you know, I don't have that much money to throw around, so it's not like I can just go out and get it anytime I want. It's something that's going to have to wait probably for my birthday or Christmas. I don't know, maybe.
Don't remind me, because I know that I'm going to have to find a way to buy Scorpio this upcoming holiday season.
Yeah.
How about you, TJ? Do you have your sights set on Scorpio?
I'm going to wait until after the Microsoft E3 to see what it is.
You know, every time I say Scorpio, I keep on thinking about The Simpsons and Hank Scorpio's theme. Remember that? Scorpio, his money, you know, it's like a gold fight.
By the way, everybody, I'm officially going to E3. I don't think I'd mentioned that yet. I got my media badge, booked my flight. I am heading over there. Me and Jonah are going to hang.
Sweet. You virtually got your media badge. The media badge hasn't been sent out yet.
Right, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Overwatch has earned Activision Blizzard over $1 billion in less than a year. From PC Gamer. The online multiplayer shooter Overwatch, which was launched on May 24, 2016, has surpassed 30 million registered players and has generated over $1 billion in that time, according to parent company Activision Blizzard's latest earnings report. This makes Overwatch the company's eighth billion-dollar franchise, rubbing shoulders with the likes of Call of Duty and Skylanders. The report also reveals Blizzard clocked $441 million in the first quarter of the year, which is an increase of 50% year-over-year. It had its biggest active online player community in its history during the same period, with 41 million monthly active users, and revenues of in-game content were up over 25% from 2016. Despite the fact that Hearthstone has yet to release anything new this year, its monthly active users also grew year over year, and Journey into Un'Goro brought in a record number of monthly players. The report also suggests the free-to-play digital card map has surpassed 70 million registered players. I mean, I saw this coming. Overwatch is rad.
Yeah, and you know, you have to feel a little bad for Heroes of the Storm, just a little.
I feel bad for Team Fortress 2.
Oh, don't feel bad for it. That's free to play, and by the way, they're still giving away hats for that. So.
I also feel bad for Monday Night Combat, because...
Well, that I feel bad for.
Because those guys essentially had the same idea as well, and they had it in the same fashion that Activision Blizzard had it for Overwatch. But man, that game did not get the love that this one did.
Do you feel bad? Well, here's the thing, you know, Rainbow Six Siege is still chugging along on its own, so it's not like Overwatch is stolen from that market.
No. Yeah, and Rainbow Six Siege still has the room to grow and is still a supported thing, whereas Monday Night Combat is dead.
So, do you play Overwatch?
I do from time to time. I check in, see how the new characters are doing, and I play with them. And I think one of my favorite things is always – one of the things that I will always give Activision Blizzard credit for in this particular aspect is their dedication to not making characters, new characters and new maps, DLC. You can access any – you can access the same characters that I can from day one right now. And I think that is ridiculously out of the ordinary for a game like that. But it's also awesome because, you pick up the game and you're on the same page, at least as far as character availability goes, as everybody else.
That is actually pretty good, yeah, because I know with, Civilization, for instance, they have a lot of civ leaders that are DLC. You'd have to buy them unless you've got the DLC, Digital Deluxe Edition. So you would have characters that are behind paywalls, and I know other companies like Capcom with Mortal Kombat did this, and I think Street Fighter has some characters that are, not buyable. So, yeah, you would have entire methods of play that are locked away behind a paywall, and that always sucks. So that's fairly good that this popular game has released characters that aren't behind paywalls, so that is good, yes.
And it's not like Blizzard isn't making money hand over. I'll tell you where a lot of that billion is coming from. It's from their loot boxes. It's all cosmetic stuff, but I guarantee you some people go nuts over those new skins. Every time you see a new batch of skins released for the characters, I see my timelines filled with more just like hype posts than anything about just like, I'm going to spend $50 on loot boxes so I can go ahead and get those character skins. And it's insanity. I wouldn't spend $50 on – I would be hard-pressed to spend $50 on DLC, but I know my friends would as well. But you got them just like before they know it, just throwing money into it like a lottery just to get that cool Pharah skin.
I have to admit that I spent $25 to get two Philip J. Fry cards on Animation Throwdown. But it really helps because, upgrading them and merging them – he really kicks ass. If I had the money, I would have spent $50 to get four of those cards to max them out, period. But anyways, here's a question for you. Do you think Activision is ahead of the curve on DLC and their policies toward it because of World of Warcraft? Because they've already had that massive experience with dealing with a 14 million subscriber base and how to apportion out paid content for them?
I do think that is a big part of it. I think that Blizzard has almost more experience than anyone when it comes to doling out just like new content and new gear and new play modes for people.
And also the missteps they did with Diablo 3, they were able to rectify. I mean, they learned a lesson there.
Oh yeah, the missteps with Diablo 3, the missteps that they had with it was the one after Frozen Throne, which I think was Cataclysm. I had a lot of people tell me that they ruined everything for a while, and then they turned it around with Pandaria. Or they started to, anyways. But,
I haven't gotten back into World of Warcraft. I'm gonna see what it's like. I saw my characters, I saw my account.
I thought Cataclysm at least sounded interesting, because they were changing up the world finally, and they were actually making events matter, or at least move forward, and not just being this stagnant, destroy this thing 1,000 million times, whatever.
Cataclysm was supposed to be World of Warcraft 2, basically. That's why Cataclysm. I haven't seen World of Warcraft 2, because the Cataclysm was supposed to be World of Warcraft 2.
You're right. Cataclysm is where you got a split in the World of Warcraft fan base, because that's where it truly became unrecognizable from the original product.
Literally, because they changed the entire geography, or at least changed it up. I miss having that huge desert. Remember the huge desert area? Mm-hmm. That was all salt flats where you had the racetrack?
It got flooded. Yeah, that changed, didn't it?
I miss it. I miss that place. Like, I don't know why.
I think I think I can put a finger on it. Cataclysm is one of the biggest reasons why there are people that try to make vanilla World of Warcraft servers.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You're gonna have that anyway, no matter what Cataclysm did. I think there are gonna be people who are really attached to that first day, and I was there on launch day. I was right there, and it was harder than hell to kill a kobold because everybody was just jumping on kobolds because everybody was there at the same time. Because I need those damn candles. Ugh. Anyways, I was ambivalent about the Worgen. I really like the goblins. I wish they were an alliance race, but. You know, I was there with my Draenei priest. That was the most successful expansion for that series ever was Burning Crusade. I think it was the first one too.
Yeah, it was the first one.
Yeah, and the Blood Elves. And of course, their usual mission went like this. Kill this kitten for fun.
Yeah, they were rather sadistic.
Yeah. Although I will say it had the best emote ever. The male Blood Elf will say, "Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me?"
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Steam changes cross-country gifting and gift trading. This from Rock, Paper, Shotgun. Steam has implemented several changes to how giving games as gifts work, some which are helpful and others less so. Helpful, if you send someone a gift and they decline it, you'll receive a refund rather than a copy of the game. Less helpful, Valve has removed the ability to buy generic gift copies of games. Now if you want to buy a gift, it has to be for someone specific. Before, Steamers could stockpile games, typically bought cheap in sales, then gift them as and when they please. Sure, some folks use this to buy games on sales, then trade them around at higher value later, undercutting Steam a bit. But others did simply like to stock up on cheap gifts for the future.
You know who usually does that? Everybody with physical items. That's what you do when there's a sale in the store. Sometimes you buy a lot of them so you can give them to people as Christmas gifts when they come over. Or some people sell them for hire, but that's what happens when you have a sale. If you don't want people to do that, don't have a sale.
I've literally never, ever done that.
I've given gifts, Steam codes to people as a gift.
Same. And, I mean, the Steam's, the big Steam sale is essentially like almost a holiday in gaming these days. And... I don't know. Like everybody pays attention when that happens because it's the chance to get some primo games for like up to 50% off. And
well, here's the thing: you want to bet that there's going to be a lot less sales on those big Steam sales now. People are just going to buy something for themselves now.
I wouldn't doubt that. I'm writing the headline on Game Watcher sometime soon. Where are the Steam sales?
Because here's the thing. Yeah, people are going to buy games because they're cheaper, but that's the point. They're going to buy games because they're cheaper. If they can only buy it for themselves, fine. They'll buy it for themselves, and that's it. And you won't see any sales, and you won't see any they won't increase in sales and the prices go back up either. Valve has to learn something called economics sometimes. It just is baffling to me. They make so many bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. Like, out of all the successful companies out there, they're amazing at how backwards they are with their understanding of it.
And here's the thing.
Didn't have a product that didn't make money for itself hand over foot, those guys would have driven that business into the ground a long time ago.
Well, it was Half-Life 2, and then they just parlayed that into having other people sell in the store. And the only reason why they're around right now is because they're the biggest right now. You know?
I think... Good old Games is starting to catch up. They've made an update to Galaxy.
I checked my watch. It was less than a second before Scott brought up Good Old Games after I said that. I knew he was going to bring up. The second I stopped talking, he was going to bring up Good Old Games. I knew it.
Well, Scott, you're glad they're there.
You may be predictable. You may be right, but you're also predictable.
They seem to be the only decent competition. Nobody likes Uplay for Ubisoft. Everybody complains about Origin. nobody complains about Galaxy, and Galaxy is getting more and more features, and frankly, I feel like they are the competition for Steam, and I'm glad that for that.
I like Gamersgate myself. They do really well. The problem is that they got their name is too close to Gamergate now, so it's sort of like people have brand, you know, but they can't change their name because they've already established that as a game store. They're pretty good, especially because they have a close relationship with Paradox. Which is why, here's the other thing. Paradox used them as their game distribution to me. So for a long while, every single game that ever was released for Paradox, I had a code for me waiting on that. I have Crusader Kings 2 and every single expansion ever released that I haven't even touched because I was part of their press account. It's wacko. It's funny.
Yeah.
At some point, I'm going to have to try Crusader Kings 2. I hear good things.
Yeah.
So I mean, this is just like I said. They're gonna feel the pinch on the next their big next big Steam sale, and they're gonna wonder why not everybody's buying as many games as they used to.
Definitely. Like, I mean, how much can we hammer it in that it's weird what they do?
On the other hand, it is nice that you'll get a monetary refund if you want to gift something to somebody and they don't want it because either they already own it or they're not interested. So you'll get the money back instead of just getting the game back. And oh, by the way, you can't give that game to anybody anymore.
Yeah.
Because you have to send it to someone specific. So I think that's part of why you get a refund now that I think about it.
Yeah, that would make sense at least.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the last item. Dota 2 is getting a co-op campaign with a story. And this comes from Kotaku. Dota 2, usually a video game about saying mean things to the humans over the internet, is embracing the spirit of togetherness later this year with a release of a series of co-op story missions as a part of a campaign called Siltbreaker. Anyone owning a 2017 Battle Pass will be given access to the campaign, which is broken into two acts, the first of which goes live later this month, the second being made available in July. Campaign sees groups of four friends, or match-made strangers, quote, undertake a cooperative adventure into the blackest depths of the Dark Reef, unquote, and ask them to traverse, quote, a diverse landscape of loathsome monsters, cunning traps, and other lethal terrors, unquote. Every time you play, you'll earn campaign XP with, quote, unquote, an exclusive Desert Sands Baby Roshan available on the Wheel of Rewards. So I'm of two minds about this. One, I like the idea of a MOBA having a co-op campaign, which it's you versus the environment. Two, I am not really, really keen on the fact that they're making this part of a season pass, which is confounding to me, because here's the thing. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people who want to play Dota, but don't want to play against other Dota players.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be treated like crap. And if you're playing a co-op campaign, those tend to be a little friendlier with whoever you're playing with, because you don't have that rush of, oh, that other team outsmarted us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering why they don't make this a game into itself, you know? Have Dota 2 cooperative as a separate thing. Not part of, you know, I don't get it.
I don't either. I mean, Dota 2 does fine on its own, and you could attach Dota 2 to it and call it this and make it this separate entity, and it would probably do fine. But, like, The idea that it's going to be like a season pass packed onto the rest of the experience sounds like they're trying maybe to get people to come over to the multiplayer side once they're done with the single player campaign. And that is where I'm like, well, yay, I just finished this campaign where I was having fun. Now I can go to a place where people will yell at me and make me feel bad for not knowing the game well enough.
You know what I would really like to see, actually? A single-player version of Dota. And here's the thing. Bots are really good if you know how to program them, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of modders out there for Dota 2 who've actually done it. Why not make a single-player where you don't have to deal with other humans at all if you don't want to? Or you can have friends play with you. You know?
I can't remember if Dota 2 has a versus AI mode. I know that League of Legends has a versus AI mode for both, like, single-player. They have one where you can literally practice, like, pick any champ you want and select your team and select the enemy team and make a custom versus AI match with just you on one side with the other AIs.
I was thinking more in terms of, like, you would have in Left 4 Dead, you know, where it's a beefed up campaign, you know, and it's specifically made for co-op.
You can do that. You can do that in League of Legends too. You can play a normal game with a team against AI.
Okay. I'm just saying, you know, if the community are a bunch of raging assholes, why not make a version of the game that doesn't have raging assholes in it?
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, making that makes no sense to make it a separate content that, you know, especially part of the. What other stuff is in this battle pass, I'm wondering, that they want you to buy that you may not want? I mean, here's the thing. It can't be new characters because here's the thing. You know, everybody wants new characters in League of Legends and Dota 2 and all that stuff. Every time there's a new character announced, it's like major news, like front page on a lot of computer games. Like, this new character is coming to Dota or League of Legends. You know, it's a big deal.
And I'll tell you what, this is a very real danger with a single player with a co-op mode in a game like Dota 2, is that you're going to have these people that are coming in wanting to try this story experience, and if you don't have a pre-made of your four friends with you, then you have a very real chance of being slapped into a room with a guy that's going to sabotage you at all corners and ruin the game for you.
I will say this, though, since it's part of the Battle Pass, no new players are going to be getting this. So at least, you know, it's going to be experienced Dota players who are going to be doing the co-op. So they're probably going to be wise enough to have just three of their friends playing with them, you know, or more likely their clan.
Yeah.
But that just makes it more confounding to me, because this is basically, you know, something that in a wider area people might like to do. But they're just doing it for people who are willing to shell out money for the season pass.
Well, it really does bring up the question: who asked for this, and is Valve delivering it to them?
Well, here's the thing: no one asked for Halo 3 ODST because it was something that was being fooled around with people in the development team. They said, "Hey, look at this cool thing." I said, "Hey, that's pretty good. Let's make it into a game." That could be the case here, in which a couple of the development team are fooling around with something and say, "Hey, look what we made." I say, "Hey, that's really good. Let's include it in the next season pass."
Yeah. Yeah, that is extremely possible. Which, I mean, I guess if it works out and it's quality, then why not release it?
Yeah, but this, like I said, this sort of smacks to me of when Rocksteady or Warner Brothers forced Rocksteady to make the Predator missions and the, what is the name of the missions that you do? You know, the ones which you're fighting in Batman Arkham. Anyways, the beatdown missions, I think they're called. When they made them separate from the game, you had to pay for them.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I don't want to pay for that. I got it for free in Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. Why would I want to pay for it now? I mean, I love Predator missions, but yeah. I don't know. It's weird. If anybody out there plays Dota 2, we'd be love to hear what you think of this. So, yeah, that comes to the end of this podcast. It sounded stupid. There was something I wanted to talk about. So before we leave, I just want to talk about Injustice 2. There's a lot of content being released by it, by people who are playing the game ahead of time. And I'm saying I am really wanting that game.
Yeah, you're not alone. I think that anyone who's following the game is just being given so much wonderful content. Ed Boon is such a generous person.
And they revealed the three of the DLC characters. They showed Starfire, Red Hood, and of course they had to include a Mortal Kombat character, Sub-Zero. But good. There were people in the silhouettes that we could see, and it looked like one of them was going to be Azrael. Oh, no, one of them is definitely going to be Raiden. He's wearing Raiden's hat. It has to be Raiden.
I've also heard possibly Constantine.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, if you're going to include Constantine, maybe an alternate skin could be the Question.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Yeah. The other thing is that I am really digging a lot of the not modding, but you know, the stuff that you can buy for your character and change them, because I saw some really cool outfits. I mean, they had one video which showed Green Lantern as a Blue Lantern and as a Red Lantern, you know, with, you know, item artifacts. You have Superman wearing the Red Sun outfit at some point. You have him wearing an all silver outfit, which really looks cool. I mean, you have Diana, Wonder Woman wearing a crown and all that stuff. I mean, all the armor mods don't make the characters not look like superheroes. They make them look like Elseworlds characters, but also realistically what you would expect from that character, you know?
So another character that's for certain out of that background, I'm looking at it right now, Black Manta. It's Black Manta there.
Yeah. Like Blue Beetle has a lot of armor mods that are really nice. And also I'm enjoying a lot of the character back and forths, what's called pre-battle, which are sometimes really hilarious.
Nice.
You know, especially when they're on the same team, you know, they have to justify the reason why they're fighting. Like,
yeah.
Dinah, you know, Black Canary and Harley Quinn, Black Canary says, "I thought you said you wanted a girl's night out." And Harley says, "Well, we're out, ain't we?" And she says,
yeah.
Dan responds, "Well, this is what they mean by taking shots, you know."
They started that in the first Injustice, but they really took it to the next level in Mortal Kombat X. Every single character has a unique bit of, has like three different unique bits of dialogue for interacting with another character. And
I mean, I know there's some repeating responses, but you know.
It's also a really neat little bit of world building that you get in the span of like 15 seconds at the beginning of every match.
I mean, you want to hear what Harley Quinn has to say to Darkseid. I want to hear what Scarecrow has to say to Brainiac. Oh, I saw some. You know what? You know, there's a suggestion that I made, right? Because here's the thing. The Scarecrow is being voiced by Robert Englund. And I had the thought, you know what would be really cool is if they had him in Mortal Kombat X, why not have Freddy Krueger be a guest DLC character? And can you imagine the conversation he and the Scarecrow would have?
Yeah.
Also voiced by the same guy.
That would be fun. And... Yeah. I don't know. I'm ready for some Starfire Nightwing interactions.
Yeah, and also, I'm eager to find out the story of the game, because you want to find out who the Joker really is. He claims he's the Joker from the regular universe and decided to pop over to this one. And I don't think that's the case. You also have... No one knows who the Scarecrow is, because Jonathan Crane was killed right off the bat. He was the first person killed in the comics. So It's like, who is this guy wearing this hood? I also like the fact that you're not actually fighting the Scarecrow. You're fighting your hallucination.
Yeah.
Scott, any...
I'd almost ahead. Say then maybe he faked his death to instill fear into people and that it really is him. But I know that's an old trick.
You know, here's the other thing. Some people are positing that maybe the Joker is actually one of the Scarecrow's hallucinations.
I would put money on that. That sounds feasible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he looks different than he did in the first game, by the way. He's more Heath Ledger slash Cesar Romero than he is the classic Joker that he was in the first game. It's going to be interesting to find out who all these people are. And it's interesting to note that Supergirl is on Batman's side in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have that entire mechanic, because she still loves Clark, but she's trying to prevent him from doing any more damage. So you have that mechanic going. It's really sad.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see how this story plays out, because we finally got... what's his name? Dr. Fate. Dr. Fate? Dr. Fate's in this one, which they mentioned him several times in the game, but like he hasn't really come forth outside
of the
comics.
Like... If you read the Injustice comics, he was in that, and I think he did get, well, I don't know if you could kill him, but he was taken out by Mr. Mixaplick, who was posing as the Spectre.
Huh. That's weird, because in Zatanna's ending, and she was a DLC character in the first Injustice.
Yeah.
And in the first Injustice, in her ending, she and Dr. Fate end up erecting a tower for, I think it, yeah.
Yeah, that's happened in the comics, but that, what happened after that was that, what's interesting, by the way, is that Dr. Fate is explicitly stating he's not the human that's wearing the helmet of Naboo. It's actually Naboo himself.
Hmm.
So that could explain how he could come back as well. And I think this is one of the few games that I'm gonna pay for the special edition because it comes with the extra characters and also the DLC that comes afterwards. So I'm probably gonna go full in on that.
Yeah.
So anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you have any feedback, so leave us a comment on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Al Pichard.
So the next episode is going to be big 300th episode, and I'm going to make sure that Paul is a part of that one. So stick around for the next episode. Wow, you really must really hate Paul. You have nothing to say about Paul.
I wish he was here.
I don't know him well yet, but I like Paul. Paul's fun to be around. Paul. He brings a happy little jaunt to the podcast. He brings his Disney World jaunt to the podcast.
Uh huh. And
his love of Nintendo, which is more genuine than Scott.
and his absolutely bizarre craving for escape rooms.
I don't know. I mean, Nintendo just kind of broke my heart, okay? And it's just kind of hard to put on those rose-colored glasses anymore. It's just I feel like Nintendo is pissed in the pool, and I just don't know what to say anymore.
Well, here's the thing. Actually, now that I think about it, Scott, you should wait because you'll get the second run of Switches, which will probably not be have as much problems as the first. Because here's the thing. Every time you have the first run of a console or whatever, that's the ones that's going to have the most... Every time you're an early adopter, those are the ones that are going to have the most technical problems.
Yeah.
The iPod, the C64, the Xbox 360. You know, you want the later versions in which they fixed everything that was wrong with the first run.
I was even hearing of a problem where... The Switch tablet bends if you leave it in the cradle too long or something. Like, it just, the plastic from the heat bends or warps. And that's just...
Yeah, that's what happened to my iPad. That happens to Apple products, too. Well, you know, you're forewarned about it.
Yeah.
We will see you next week. Paul will be with us, and it should be a fun time.
Yes, it will be fun. Yay!
Huzzah.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.